Jim Sheridan and David Merriman are the team behind the movie Recreation. It's a 12 Angry Men style exploration of the Sophie Toscan de Plantier murder case, and it runs in Tralee and Killarney cinemas this week. It also opened at the recent Galway Film Fla. I interviewed both men, and I talked to Jim, who has made documentaries, remember, for Sky, about the whole Sophie Toscan de Plantier saga, and I asked him why he felt the need to make this movie.
Yeah, I made a 5-part TV series for Sky, and I couldn't put all the information I had into it. And at the end, I wasn't happy that I'd finished with the story. There were a lot of constraints, you know, not from Sky, but from legal people. I start working with Dave. I said, I wasn't finished, and should we just keep going? And we start working on a documentary, but eventually we got to a situation where I said, look, we need to put a bit of emotion into this, and we can't do that with just facts, and we need to reflect how emotionally impactful this story has been on the Irish people. And it kind of possesses the same kind of power as The Field, or, you know, those kind of stories that just hang around. And, you know, same as The Field, it's a lonely murder in a country area, which is unusual. And I said, we got into a bit of a bother. We were trying to make a documentary with Vicky Cripes and me asking her questions as if she was Sophie reliving her life. And we realized we didn't have the resources for that. So we just changed to a jury room and at the last minute. And I said, you know, I knew Sidney Lumet and I love his film based on the Reginald Rose play. And it's probably one of the greatest films set in one room, except for one shot in the courtroom. And I said, we should do a homage to that. And, you know, the advantage we have is that people know who the defendant is. And that's where it started. And we spent 6 days in the hotel writing it and 11 days shooting it. And then we came back to Ireland and added a few more days. And that's what you're seeing. It's a powerful capsule of almost water cooler moments of what people think about the murder and the prejudices they bring to it.
And David, from your point of view, that using that kind of theatrical device or that construct, the 12 Angry Men, was that an effective way of putting the viewer into the picture of what at times can be very complex things that happened long ago, evidence from different stages, different reviews of the case, all of that? It puts them into the, like, as if they are one of the jurors trying to figure out what happened.
Yeah, I think so. And actually some other folks have said, you know, that the audience is the 13th juror, and that's kind of what we were going for. It was, and it is very complex, as you say. You don't want to bore people. And as Jim said, you want to draw them in with emotion, because that's how you kind of get people to listen to essentially, you know, facts, but positioned in a way that make people feel like we're not just hearing information. And so, because we had a lot of new information, we'd done a lot of research and had hired blood spatter analysts and pathologists and former FBI agents who worked at the behavioral science unit there in America to look at the case. And we discovered a lot of new things. And there was a narrative created about the case, which we felt was completely false and misleading and distorted. And so we wanted to retell that in a way. And so thankfully, that the budget did go over and we used it in this way in the jury room, because I don't think the other film would have been as good. And I think it seems to have landed and has resonated with people. It's been very well reviewed and went over really well in America. So we're hoping people come see it here and talk about it.
But like, the original story started with a picture of Ian's partner beaten up, which looks terrible. And the emotion was, if he did this, he must have done that. That's basically the case against him. There's no other real evidence of violence, of even knowing Sophie, of even being up there, of even a footprint, of even a fingerprint, of even hair, of even blood. So there's nothing to connect them. There's something to connect them to another crime, which is attacking his partner. But to equate the two is too, you know, it's too easy, you know.
With that in mind, just for either of you here, just on the subject of, you know, what happened and trying to figure out and all of the. What do you say to the, and it, I know it's a complex question to answer given how many years have gone by, how much media attention have been on this, how much controversy have been around it, and I think it comes through in the interaction between the jurors as well. Like, in the initial stages of this investigation in 1996 December, bad mistakes were made, errors were made in not sealing off the scene, evidence was contaminated. What we did, someone says, well, look, everything that has flown from that is automatically tainted. So will we ever get the truth? Or are ye on the right road? Because the initial seeds of what was there have been, were scattered and lost in terms of evidence, if I can put it that way.
No, the forensic team that went down from a society and a country that had endured 30 years of troubles. They were sophisticated out the gazoo in relation to forensic. All this is nonsense to, in my mind. Now, maybe the local police made a mistake, but nobody has ever pointed out to me who did it, who made the mistake, who tainted the evidence. It doesn't look like
who,
that.
Who didn't seal off the scene, I suppose, is what I'm saying, properly or correctly, in order to preserve the evidence. And we still see from time to time mistakes being made in that area.
Yeah, but if Ian Bailey stopped 200 yards from the scene and it's only half an hour after the police found the body or an hour or two, that means they've sealed off the scene. Where did we get they didn't seal off the scene? Who told us that? The police themselves? Oh, we didn't seal off the scene. Sorry, mistake. No, it's David, too easy, all of that.
Okay, David, your view on that central question?
Well, look, you know, right now, new DNA testing was done recently. And really, in a situation like this, that's, and a 28-year-old murder, that's the silver bullet. And I'm hopeful that DNA testing is going to turn up a result. Now, I'd also say that in 2012, the French did find unknown male DNA on Sophie's boot. That's not been widely reported enough, I don't believe. And that unknown male DNA has never been attributed to anybody, except for that it's not Ian Bailey. That's kind of just been dismissed. So from my point of view, I'm hopeful that that DNA testing, the new DNA testing, will come up with the results to tell us who actually killed Sophie. In regards to the scene, I mean, like, look, they, you know, obviously she laid out there overnight, but like, it's the dead of winter and she's laid there all night. I don't know how much would have been able to be found in that time, because it was a pre-forensic time. DNA was only new. You know, so now there was, you know, they, as we point out in the movie, they allowed the neighbor to drive through the scene and drop off.
Yes, with the rubbish,
How on earth somebody does that, I don't know. That just makes zero sense to me. I'm aware that there was a casting of a footprint at the scene, and they use old casting material, and so that footprint was never able to be used. Obviously, that's an error on their part. But, you know, look, we look to the DNA.
Dave, on the other side of that, Eugene Gilligan, who I spoke to, who's probably a very brilliant forensic investigator, simply told me that the Irish police weren't allowed to investigate in Paris. They were told to turn around their heel and go back. Now, somebody had to defend the Irish police at that stage. I don't like the idea of them being portrayed as bumbling idiots. That's not the issue.
No, I agree.
The issue is, why was there not an investigation in France? And why was it limited to 3 square miles of West Cork? You know, it just seems wrong to me. You know, I don't want to be contentious, but that's where it's higher up than the police, you know?
Jim, can I ask you, what was it like starring in the drama, being the foreman?
Well, it was interesting because, you know, I knew so much about it. Like, I knew me lions, and the danger was me saying things that I shouldn't have known. So I had to sometimes stop in midstream and go, well, what do I say? So that, you know, it's almost like people don't, you know, with acting, people don't understand that mistakes and getting it wrong and saying the wrong thing and not sure what you're saying and chaos and being real life is more powerful than being prepared and saying lines. That belongs to the theatre. You know, when you're up close in a camera, it's even worse than sitting with a person across a dinner table because, you know, you might go out on a date, but you're not going to stare at the person to say, oh, will I go out on a second date? Because if you do that, they won't go with you. But when there's a camera there, it's not just like a person. It's a forensic investigation of emotions. So you just have to be truthful and messy and human. And not necessarily you don't have to be a great actor, which I'm not, but you just probably have to be truthful. And I found it fun and I could direct it from within the scene rather than outside, you know?
Yeah, which is a help. David, look, some of the performances are excellent. And as the construct was, you mentioned the prejudices, as Jim mentioned, people, their jurors are human beings, they're not machines. So they were bringing their own feelings and thoughts into this case as well, maybe, as part of that. That kind of what worked in it, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And from our point of view, we had many conversations about how the story got going in Ireland, you know, which was, you know, there was this narrative created by the police past the media that Ian was the killer. Ian then behaved in the way that he did, which he kind of wanted to be close to the fire, as it were, you know, to be close to something that was happening to maybe rejuvenate his journalistic career. And then we have the people of Ireland and what we place on that. You know, we're storytelling creatures. So we see a victim, we see a villain, and we see heroes, and we select that in our minds. And so Ian helped with the way that he was and the fact that he beat Jules and of course the police. And then Sophie was obviously the victim. So from our point of view, we wanted to examine that bias. Where does it come from? What do we bring into the room ourselves when we're looking at things? And how much do we have to be tilted before we start to distort the view of things and then reject everything else outside? Like, as Jim's pointed out a million times, you know, the initial statements of Marie Farrell and Dan Griffin, which identified Ian Bailey, said that the guy was 5'7", wearing a beret and a long black coat. Then a month later, he's 6'4", and he's Ian Bailey. Now, the distance is very, very close. You can't mistake somebody for 5'7 and 6'4". The huge disparity in that.
Yeah.
And that's actually what stopped the DPP from prosecuting Ian, was that the police initial statements were one thing and then another. But again, like I said, there's like blinders on that at times. And you've seen it historically with a lot of the people who cover this case, to just ignore these things and say, oh, well, it was Ian Bailey, because Ian Bailey is a villain, he must be this villain, which I think is ridiculous.
Okay, Jim, what's your view just on, I know you're passionate about this, obviously, but do you have a view on people who would feel, and obviously you've been driven to do this because of your examination of the case and the facts and your desire for, I suppose, justice here? But that you, what would you say to people who feel, look, God, this has been going on so long. She passed away. She was murdered. You know, there's always a fight for justice, but that some people would throw their hands up. They've seen documentaries. They've read articles. There was the defamation case. There was Ian and the way he lived his life afterwards. All of that, people are just let it lie. Don't keep it going. What's your view on that? Because that is an attitude that is out there among some people when they look at this case or think about this case.
Yeah, it's like the statute of limitations argument in legal circles, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, okay, it's more than 6 years old, therefore, why are you complaining? Or, you know, why are you taking a case? Well, you know, time is the friend of the devil in that case, you know? The longer we can keep it tipping along, the less chance of opening the pot. I think the only duty we have to that woman smashed in her head with a rock is to the truth. I don't think we have a duty to anything other than the truth. There's no duty to respect me and what I'm saying, nor Dave Merriman or the family. They've been hurt, but the real duty is to the truth. And once you start on the journey of, oh, well, the truth is shiftable, you know, in a digital world where you can manufacture images and you can change what we're seeing.
Yeah.
People are losing faith in the media and in truth and in narrative, and demonic forces are taking over the world, in my view. You know, if it takes 30 years to stop them, or 50, and if I'm still alive, I'll do it.
It's a fight worth having. Okay, yeah. David, listen, what sort of reaction have you been getting to the, you know, in Galway and as more people see this movie, what are your hopes there?
Yeah. Well, we got great reactions. It premiered at Tribeca Film Festival in New York first, and it's gotten rave reviews, which we're delighted with. We were worried that Americans wouldn't understand it because of the background. And then it went to Galway and it got really well received there too. And just recently today, you know, there's more reviews coming out and they all are really positive. So that's lovely. We want people to go see this movie. It's the movie Jim said they don't want it to see. We found it very hard to get funded. Got lots of new information about the case. And look, we just want people, we started this movie to do the same thing that the family are doing. Keep the story.
David, I just have to correct you there. Like Screen Ireland were, you know, concerned about us being investigative and true and honest and that, but they did support us. And so did Luxembourg. So we did get state support, but it's not an easy story. I wouldn't say, you know, you're going to see it on the TV airwaves, you know, your only chance is probably see. Where are the cinemas? Are they in Tralee and Killarney, Omniplex?
Yes, Tralee and Killarney, and there's Bantry as well, which is just over the border.
Bantry should be interesting.
Yeah.
It should be interesting.
Well, look, guys, it's been fascinating to talk to you. It's a fascinating movie. One thing I wanted to ask David, look, the cast, what were they like when making this? Because they seemed to bounce off each other really well. Vicky Krebs, John Connors, you said you shot it over 11 days. I mean, they must have been really buying into the process from the performances you managed to get out of them.
For sure, and there was a lot of improvisation in the room, and the actors had a lot of freedom, and we had kind of Vicky and John and Jim. And Jim, because he knew so much, could control a lot of the scenes, you know, and feed off things. And we did long takes with two cameras, sometimes 20, 25 minutes. And inside of that, it was very creative. We had a wonderful cast. I mean, the acting in it, I think, is really, I'm very proud of the performances of folks in there. They're just really out of their skin. It was a blessing. That really helped the movie work. Without that, it wouldn't have worked at all. You know, you need that kind of truth in performances, I think, in order to sell something like this.
There you go. That's Jim Sheridan and Dave Merriman, the men behind Recreation, which is showing in cinemas in Kerry this week.